It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
What is up, gentlemen? Another week has passed, and boy, this is going to be a fun episode tonight. We get to air all of our complaints and grievances.
And for once, it's not me or Jim making the complaints about Apple products.
I know. Isn't that something? This is unusual.
Yeah, y'all got some new gear that you can complain about, so yeah.
So Brad and I took the plunge and each got our own M1 Mac Mini. And it seemed like it was going to be great on paper, but Brad, I'll let you start with your problems because yours were actually worse than mine.
Okay, so came in probably a couple of days after Brian's did, and I hooked it up to a 20-inch 16:9 monitor, and it looks like it's going to hook up okay, and I am greeted with a recovery mode dialogue, and it basically says on the screen, your boot volume's messed up or something or another, and it can't boot.
So this is straight out the box, Brad? Like first plug-in?
Straight out of the box, plugged in the mice, plugged in the mouse, plugged in the keyboard, plugged in the HDMI cable, turn it on, and it basically boots to recovery mode and says, boot volume is corrupt or something. Click here to attempt to boot again, or click here to start reinstalling Mac OS. So I did that. I tried to reinstall Mac OS, and it's got the typical, you know, recovery volume on it, just like it does on an Intel Mac, but it's not like in a partition or whatever. It's kind of stored in flash. It's a little bit different the way it's laid out than it is on the Intel Macs. So that didn't work. And I tried it a second time, and we're getting into the whole repeat the process, get the same result, definition of insanity. So I'm like, okay. So I start Googling, and I'm like, oh, I know what to do. I'll just download Mac OS on my other Mac, which is an Intel Mac, and make a boot disk. Well, then I start digging, and it's like, no, don't do that. So basically, I connected it to via a USB-C cable to my MacBook with USB-C. Thankfully, I have a MacBook. If you don't have a MacBook and you need to do this, you would be out of luck. And basically opened Apple Configurator 2 and started a DFU restore like you would on a broken iPad.
You would a phone, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, like your broken phone or broken iPad.
So is that the way you're supposed to do a restore on these M1s going forward? You're going to have to treat it like an iPhone for a DFU?
There is a built-in recovery mode, and to get there, you don't use Command R to boot to it. You hold down the power button on the back just like you would on your phone, and you hold it down for like 3 seconds and let go, and then it boots into recovery mode.
So it really is a big phone.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Apple silicon. It's just like the iPads and the phones, if you will. But the recovery mode and everything, other than the screens that you see, are pretty just the same process as far as going through Apple Configurator. But it was pretty horrible pulling that out of the box, and that's immediately what you're greeted with. I was excited about, like, you know, I can't wait to install Parallels and some other crap. I'm going to try out some new M1 stuff, you know, Apple silicon specific stuff, and that was not to be had. I probably unboxed it about 5:30 or 6 in the afternoon, and I wasn't using it until after midnight between, you know, making dinner and goofing off and, you know, peeking my head around the corner to see what the monitor's doing, you know, because, you know, Apple Configurator has to go through, you know, it's got to download that entire Mac OS image, which is 13 gigs, which on a, you know, a gigabit internet, it's still fast, but It's still
13 gigs.
It's still a pain in the butt, you know.
Well, let me be the first to say that Steve would have never let this happen.
I wouldn't have made it out of the door if Steve was still alive.
My issue wasn't that bad. Mine didn't require a DFU. However, my HDMI does not work on the Mac Mini. Now, I can plug it into a TV. It works just fine. I have two different monitors. One of them is a 4K ViewSonic. It's a nice monitor, and it goes out of range. Now, I can take the USB-C to HDMI or the USB-C to DisplayPort. Not a problem in the world. It immediately works. HDMI to HDMI, and it just, I see a flash on the screen, it goes away, it keeps flashing in and out, and then it just says out of sync and gives up, which is ridiculous on the face of it. This is like one of the easiest connection methods ever that should work, and of course, it doesn't. And that just, I had to take this and hook it up to my TV from 2008 to easily get this thing up and going and booted and patched. So just weird. And then halfway through that process, we get this weird static screen. And I think, Brad, you've seen that too. I've seen other people that I know with M1 Max on Twitter. We were sort of commiserating the same thing.
Yep.
And it just comes out of nowhere. And it just looks like, you know, trying to watch one of the pay TV channels back in the 90s on a satellite or something if you didn't pay for it.
I remember those days. I did see another one this week where people were talking about pink dots.
Yep,
coming pink through. Dots.
Yeah. I had the pink dots, too, during the recovery screen fiasco.
Jeez.
I was seeing, you know, I would try to kick off the built-in restore procedure before I went the DFU part route, and I would click, okay, I want to restore from, you know, the internal recovery disk, and the screen looked fine. As soon as I click okay, the pink dots appear across the bottom, probably 20 or probably within the bottom three quarter of the screen.
I mean, I'm sorry you had to go through this, but it is quite interesting to learn that it really does operate like a big iPhone or iPad, where it's the same sort of recovery process and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, it's not like a Mac or a PC even, you know, like as far as, you know, recovery goes. I find that pretty interesting that, you know, I guess that's where it started. That's where the, you know, the processor started and the whole, their ARM packaging. And so I guess it makes sense that it's like that. I just hadn't thought about it being like that. So that's pretty wild.
Now you can do Intel Macs the same way. You can connect them via a USB-C port and configure them through Apple Configurator. So if you were, say, an enterprise or whatever, and you had to deploy hundreds of Macs or dozens of Macs, you could use the same route. But to be forced to do that right out of the gate, and, you know, you don't have a choice with the M1, is like if you want to do a hard recovery, you have to use Apple Configurator. It's like with the Intel Macs, if you want to do a hard recovery, you just pop a USB key in it and, you know, hit a command and, you know, you're up and going. But I had the same screen that Brian did. It's while it's doing the recovery from, you know, I've got Apple Configurator on my MacBook, and it shows, you know, the little progress bar and says it's restoring, just like you would see if you had your iPhone connected to it. Well, on the monitor, I see the Apple logo, a black screen, and the little white progress bar riding across, and then all of a sudden the screen goes black. And I'm like, oh, crap. And I was like, well, I'll just leave it because I don't want to sit here for another hour diddling with this. So then all of a sudden, the screen starts going through the illegal channels, you know, cycling. And, you know, it was like static, but in a zebra screen. It was like weird, out of phase type stuff. And, I mean, it's almost hard to look at. And then all of a sudden, I hear it chime. And then it boots up, and I'm like, well, there you go.
So, you know, we're computer guys. We have no problem dealing with this sort of stuff. It's irritating, but we can. But if we were normal people, these would be showstoppers in both cases, particularly Brad's problem. I mean, having to go into recovery mode the moment you get your device is just, it's unfathomable to me how something would make it from the factory like that.
It's like an IKEA computer, really.
I mean, part of me is like, that's why they've still got the Intels on sale, because, you know, they know those work. And I hadn't really thought about it, but is probably not the best option for somebody who doesn't know what they're doing to go out and buy like an M1 MacBook Air for school or whatever, because there's probably going to be a lot of little things like that, or software incompatibilities and things that, you know, first off, people haven't come across, or, you know, it's not like a common issue, and so trying to find fixes for things and stuff like that, it won't be as easy, you know. But Apple's not touting them as, you know, basically, hey, you're a beta tester for this.
Yeah, we didn't get any sort of price discount for any of this stuff too. And things like HDMI display, I mean, that is, I liken this to getting a beta car from a car manufacturer.
HDMI is more than basic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just basic.
I liken this to getting a beta car, and then, you know, you're expecting some issues with the engine, and then the door falls off the moment you open it. Like, you know, you don't expect that issue, right? Putting a door on a car is the easiest thing in the world. You know, making HDMI work for a computer should be dead simple. I mean,
a Raspberry Pi can operate HDMI easily.
Yes.
Right. And I mean, HDMI came out in 2004, guys. Right. So 17 years to get it right on a brand new state-of-the-art machine.
Well, I started following some of the subreddits. There's a subreddit for MacBook Air. There's one called MacBook, I think. And there's another one called Mac Mini. I actually started following those three subreddits just to see what the conversations were about the M1. And there's a lot of people on there who I don't presume to be computer people. And they're like, oh, I just bought my first Mac ever and I got the M1. I mean, can you imagine their experience, that being their first Mac ever and having no experience here's how you troubleshoot a Mac, et cetera, et cetera. Here's how to use Apple Configurator. And then, you know, they've got a dead Mac straight out of the box. I mean, you would box it back up and take it right back to Apple.
Yep. That's a Surface computer they just sold right there.
Well, and the other problem is that even if all that happens, you know, most of your Apple stores across the country are still closed. So you would not be able to return it to Apple. You'd have to ship it back up and ship it back to
right.
And if there was any kind of repair, if you were incapable of flashing it, you'd have to ship it back to Apple. And I would hope that Apple would do priority overnight both ways. But even then, you know, it's still like that with they'll do an exchange, but if they have them in stock, and two, we'll exchange it, but we need to put a hold on your credit card to ship you the new item. That's a terrible experience. And I get why they do it, but it's still a terrible experience, like you said, straight out of the gate for a new computer.
Yeah. I mean, there's no genius, no genius training right now. I mean, I always laugh when I would go into Apple stores and see so many people. They're not there for them to fix their Mac or anything else. They're literally there and there's somebody sitting there showing them how to, like, this is your web browser. Click on Safari. Here's your email. Give me, you know, do you have your password information? We'll let you type it in and set up your email for you. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that Apple touts that I think is really great. You know, if, you know, hey, we'll help you set this up. You know, just make a genius appointment and come on in. And yeah, none of that right now.
Well, and I'd even go so far as to say that Brad's issue sounds, it sounds almost just kind of like a corrupted data issue somewhere, somehow. And I'm kind of with y'all. I still don't see how that passes a checksum out of the gate. Surely to goodness, they have a way to do a checksum on the data to make sure it installed properly without going through the install. You know, a lot of these other issues, kind of like you say, that's bad. This is stuff that should not be getting out of, even on a first-gen product, and Apple does kind of have a bit of an insider reputation that first gen products, you kind of stay away and give them a generation to iron out the problem, so to speak. But a corrupted data issue, you can kind of see that as a one off. You know, if you make 2 million products, you're going to have 200 of them that are busted out of the gate. And that's what, doing quick math, 0.01% fail rate. At the end of the day, you still got 200 pissed off customers out of 20 million.
So Brad, I mean, I know you and Brian have had similar issues otherwise that other people have had otherwise, but from a disk point of view, once you got this basically flashed and reset up, any more issues like that? Or is it basically just once you got the actual OS going, that's been working, you know, like there's not something with the hardware that was actually the problem. It was just a software issue, and you know, once you got that resolved, you're seeing other things, but it's not related to the hard drive or anything like that.
Haven't seen any more issues related to that. It's been as if, you know, a normal type brand new Apple type situation where it's just beautiful out of the gate. Now, I was still having the pink squares on my HDMI connected monitor, and I wound up buying a 24-inch 4K monitor anyway, so I got that going.
Who are you, me?
I got that going a few days after my poor experience with the HDMI connection.
I haven't had any issues with my actual hardware. It's been really, really good. I use it primarily right now for encoding 4K Blu-rays, and that's been going really good. It takes about 28 hours to encode one, whereas on my 2015 iMac, it would take days. Like, I only did one ever. I think that was Thor the Dark World as a test. It took about 3 or 4 days for that to actually work, and I haven't tried anything else since. So, you know, it's very, very speedy. And being able to sideload iOS apps, you know, having Overcast running on it, having LumaFusion running on it, having the Apollo Reddit client running on it is kind of nice. Now, they're not always stable. They sometimes die. Overcast dies frequently. That I can kind of forgive because it's a new thing and they didn't design it to run on it. But, you know, even some games will run on the thing, too. So it's kind of...
Does that still work?
Oh, yeah.
Sideloading? I thought I read somewhere that said they were going to try to prevent that.
You can't sideload. We've been referring to it on our chats as sideloading, but in the Mac App Store, you can search for Mac or iPhone apps. And if they haven't blocked it, you can use it. So
gotcha.
The other day in the chat, I tweeted at Wooji Juice, who makes Ferrite for the iPad and iOS for podcast editing, which I use or used to use when my iPad wasn't dead. And I noticed that I couldn't run it on the M1 Mac. And I asked him about it. He said, we purposely did that because we think it's an inferior experience and we want to build a dedicated Mac app. You know, fair enough. But lots of apps don't have that sort of problem. So it's, you know, which is, you know, sort of natural if you have a trackpad, because again, you have all the touch gestures you would have on iOS. So I would take issue with that statement, but you know, it is what it is. So I'm overall pleased with the hardware. Rosetta 2 runs pretty fast. Getting external devices to work is kind of iffy. Like, I had a Logitech C910, maybe C920, one of those old webcams from 2012, 2013, and it just wouldn't work. And then one day it magically did. And I already had Rosetta for other stuff, so I don't know why it started working, but it did. I took my iPhone and used Epoch Cam, or whatever the thing is from Elgato. Surprisingly, it mostly worked. It would freeze up every once in a while. Works great on my Intel Max, just not so great on that one. It kind of does. Let's see what else. I think that's the primary use case that I've been using it for. I've been trying to make it my day-to-day Mac and installing things like Hazel and Alfred and those types of things on it. But the thing that irritates me about the HDMI issue, to go back to that real briefly, is that it only has two USB-C ports on it. And I don't like wasting one of them on something that HDMI should be able to do. I do have an external 1 terabyte hung off this Mac Mini, but I'm having to use my other USB-C port for that, and it's really irritating.
And also, to boot, USB-C hubs are not exactly cheap still at this point. They're not nowhere near as cheap as a standard USB 3 hub would be, and I would imagine.
They're not, but I pre-ordered one from OWC that I'll put in the show notes that's $150, and that comes out in maybe the end of May, something like that.
I thought it was April, but you may be right.
If it's April, it's great. I think it was May when they did it.
God, for $150, it better have 16 ports coming off of it.
Well, for a USB-C port, for a USB-C hub, that's not exactly expensive either.
Hey, the $300 ones don't have 16 ports.
I think it was like four or five that it had, which for my purposes probably should be sufficient.
Well, you're effectively doubling your number of ports. So
yes. And I don't have that many USB-C devices. What I more anticipate than anything will be external hard drive type things that I'll usually end up using. Like, I have a Samsung external one that I stole off of my Xbox and moved it back to my Mac, because I need more storage on my Mac than I do on my Xbox right now. Because I think I only have 512 gigs on the Mac Mini.
I had to eject an external drive to be able to plug in my mic to record tonight. Like, because I've got two big external drives that stay plugged into my Mac all the time, my MacBook. And I had a little one that I was getting some stuff off, like a little 1 terabyte SSD that I have. And so I had to eject that one because the other port is what's driving the monitor. I did see some rumors this week that we might get a MacBook Pro with an HDMI port. Imagine that this year.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, as long as we're complaining about Apple stuff, too, I have another bone to pick, because I'm still getting bitten by the AirPods Max issue, where for some reason... You know, these things don't have an off switch. You put them in their little brassiere, and they're supposed to go into low power mode. Even if you don't, they're supposed to...
We're all laughing, by the way. We're all on mute, but when you say that, like, everybody on camera, I'm just going to interrupt to say everybody was laughing. That's pretty damn funny.
The little bra that comes with the AirPods Max, even if you don't and you're not using them, it's supposed to go into low power mode after 5 minutes. What's happening is that it's connecting to any of your iCloud-enabled devices. So, you know, when you do something with AirPods, it becomes associated with your iCloud account. So your Mac will see it, your iPad will see it, your everything will see it. Your watch will see it. And I'll put them in at a, you know, I'll come home from dialysis. They'll be at a, you know, 75%. I'll plug them in, unplug them. They're at 100%. I put them in my bag. I get up the next morning. And as I'm checking my phone for the first time that day, I'll just see a little progress thing pop down for a second that says AirPods Max 1%. And it's in red. And then it goes away. I don't know what it connected to overnight. Even if it connected to something, if you're not actively using it, it should disconnect. It should not. Their microphones.
Is there supposed to be some touch point in your little brassiere that tells them that they're plugged into it, like some sort of metal, like, hey, if this is touching or this is connected, don't turn on or anything like that?
They have magnets in there that are supposed to activate the low power mode. And they do, ostensibly, they do. The little thing comes down and clicks.
That makes absolutely no sense, because if it's like with the AirPod Pros, if the case is, it's so ridiculously simple. If case is shut and both AirPods are in case charging, do not connect to anything. If AirPod Max are in the bra and they're, you know, then turn it off. Don't connect to anything. How difficult is that?
Apparently very, because the only fix you can do is a factory reset of the AirPods and make them, you know, completely forget all of your devices and set them up new each time you want to use it. Until they issue a firmware fix. God knows when that's going to be.
Jeez Louise.
But I've gone back to primarily just using my AirPods Pro right now when I'm there, because it's such a hassle to have to take them out and leave them plugged in all the time, which, you know, no telling what it's doing to the battery. So it's a big inconvenience. And when you go Googling for the issue, that's the only fix that anyone knows of as well. You know, you can go for it and forget it from all your iCloud accounts, or you can go in and hold down the crown and the button and do a full factory reset after 15 seconds. And it's just like,
just hyper convenient.
Yeah. It's not good.
This is what you have to do to make your $550 headphones usable. That's a bunch of malarkey.
It is,
or just leave them plugged in all the time, right? Yeah, which is not great for your headphones.
Or you make it forget your stuff, and then you can't just pull it out of your bag and start using it. So this is the type of stuff that Apple really needs to fix. This is the dumb stuff, right? Their hardware is great, but the software people are spread way, 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 way too thin. Maybe that's why it came out in a press release when they announced it. Let's see. This week I moved away from Text Expander finally. I was still on the old version 5. So you remember back in like 2015 or 2016, I think, they went to a software as a subscription model, and they were really trying to get enterprise customers to use it, which I thought was sort of a weird thing. But, you know, there's lots of competition out there for that type of thing. And I've had Alfred forever. Love Alfred. And I never even realized the whole snippets thing was in there. And when I noticed that, I did a migration from Text Expander to Alfred, and it went pretty seamless. And, you know, life is pretty good. I really need to make more use of that app. I have a coworker who sent me some scripts for our VPN, our corporate VPN, where, you know, that's what he's written a series of workflows in Alfred to go ahead and connect up with that, which is pretty neat. And I need to get more into that. So that is an aspect of automation. I've really been focused mostly on doing stuff with Siri shortcuts and not so much with automation on the Mac. But, you know, now that I have an M1, you know, I think my interest is peaked, and I'm going to try to do more of that. What about you guys? You guys use Alfred, do you not?
You know, yeah. I mean, did you know there's actually an iOS app that'll let you run workflows in Alfred that do stuff in your iOS app?
I know about the Alfred remote. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, the remote. Yeah.
Yeah, I have that set up. Thing,
yeah. Yeah, I've been using Alfred for several years now, and I use the snippets part of it. I've got several workflows for, you know, firing up VNC for different machines when I had a couple running around here. Weather, you know, check weather conditions, basically. Stuff like launching a browser just directly into incognito mode or you know, doing little snippets like that. But yeah, I mean, it's been my launcher of choice for several years now. It works great.
I used it mostly for looking up contacts. I used it for launching programs. I never used the built-in search on macOS. I've always just used Alfred instead. But now I want to start becoming more of a power user with it after all these years, because I've owned the PowerPack license forever so that you could do the extra stuff. Otherwise, it's normally free if you've never played with it. It's worth checking out.
Yeah, I mean, it does plenty just in the free version. I mean, there's a whole lot you can do with the Power Pack, but if you just want to use it as your launcher instead of
Spotlight,
yeah, it works great in just, you know, in that function all by itself.
So I'll ask the silly question here, because I've never used Alfred. I just use Spotlight on a Mac for everything. What does Alfred get you with the launcher that Spotlight can't do?
It's everything else you can do with Alfred that the launcher can't do.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've used Spotlight. I don't even know, because I came from Quicksilver to Alfred, and so I've never really been a Spotlight user at all.
Built-in searches for Amazon, Google, and other stuff. Like, it's got some neat little things built in. I've never used just the free version. I always wanted to support it, so I did the Power Pack. So I'm assuming that's in the free version as well, but it's very, very powerful. It does more than just what Spotlight will do.
Well, it's just one of those that I've always, Spotlight's always done just fine for me, and I've seen some of these other launchers. Now, if you can program workflows and get a lot of shortcut style compatibility or functionality, rather, with it on a Mac, I mean, that sounds good.
Yeah, the search function is cool. You've got Google. You can do, like search Amazon immediately. You can search IMDb straight from the prompt. Just about anything that's got a search API built in, you can do it straight from Alfred. So, you could just type in IMDb, and somebody's name, and it'll take you straight in, to the page for it or whatever.
I use DuckDuckGo for that, like all their Bang shortcuts. So if I want to search for something on Amazon, I do Bang A and then, Anker Charger.
Yeah, it's like the Bang.
So you can program shortcuts in like that. Okay, that makes a ton of sense then.
Though don't Google for Bang while you're at work. That's what I learned back in 2003. Actually,
I think it's just an energy drink now.
Yeah, now it's just an energy drink. But,
well, so one year for Christmas, I wanted one of those 10x10 pop-up like canopies that you would take, tailgating or whatever. And I told my wife that there was a sporting goods store that had it on sale, and she learned the hard way that Dick's.com is not a sporting goods store.
Well, that should have been obvious.
So, Josh, tell us about this bill that was floating around.
Well, it was a bill that was up in North Dakota, and they were trying to get a bill put into the state that would force Apple to allow the alternative app stores. Basically, it would do kind of what Epic Games has been trying to push through with everything. And, of course, Apple was very much, this is going to kill our business. And, of course, there's a lot of people that are fighting against it. They did pass that bill down. They shot it down in the system, thankfully, or not thankfully, depending on your stance. North Dakota did come through and say that, that we're not doing it, that Apple kind of won, as they say. The bill's been shot down. It could be reintroduced again or somewhere else at a different time. The basic gist is just the same kind of antitrust stuff that Apple's been hearing chatter about for quite some time, that they have a monopoly on the iPhone, which they kind of do, yes, but in my opinion, it all comes down to if you own the entire supply chain start to finish, is it because do you have this because of your success, or have you created a monopoly even though it's your own stinking products with your own software system that nobody else has to do anything, that you control the entire chain top to bottom? That's the argument that other people were trying to make, that it's a monopoly, but when you've built it up top to bottom, how is it a monopoly?
I'm pretty sure that bill was introduced by just some guy who liked playing Epic Games on his iPhone and can't do it anymore. And I mean, because it, I don't even think it made it to the floor vote. Like, they had it and it was going to, it basically got shot down by other folks, but it was, just some bored Nebraska, like, he's a rep, but he's also a gamer. And so he's like, hey, let's give this a shot. And it got a lot of press.
It's an odd thing because the Mac has had alternate app stores for years and, it's been fine. But it's never been as successful as iOS, like orders of magnitude less popular than iOS, which is also much more of an attack vector for people. And again, how people are not very, let's say, savvy when it comes to protecting themselves with this stuff. Oh, my cousin told me about this new app store, and you put it on there, and then you can do it. Then their phone gets compromised, or they get hacked, or whatever. And it's like, Apple sucks. And it's like, Apple will take the blame for these inferior experiences. So I can kind of understand where they're coming from, plus the financial aspect of protecting the revenue streams. I get it. But at the same time, having one-stop shopping for everything makes it really easy to do tech support for your family.
Well, the previous M1 issues y'all discussed in the beginning aside, top to bottom, start to finish, I think Apple has the smoothest process for all their products of anybody. You may have to go to a company like a Tesla or a super-duper high-end luxury business to get the type of ease of use that you get out of Apple products all the way around. They're not perfect. Nothing is. And it's one of those where if you want to throw a worst case scenario out there and feel a chill run up your spine, think about when Facebook brings their app store to the iPhone if this passes. And they will. you know, think about all the privacy issues and crap they're going to get out of that when that happens. But, you know, it's like you say with different stuff like that. Yes, you can kind of sort of sideload stuff with Alt Store and other things of that nature. But by and large, the thing that I like about my iPhone, the reason why I've never tried to root it or hack it or anything else, is because it works. And once the App Store came out with a lot of the stuff they've done, 99% of anything I'd ever want to run on a handheld device runs with stuff out of the App Store.
Yeah, but how long have you been an iPhone guy? Because I'll say this, in my opinion, the iPhone was fairly crippled for what it was capable of doing in the early years, right? And so to me, I loved being jailbroken, you know, back as far as the iPhone 3G. All the stuff that it was capable of doing, you were
copy and paste, man.
Right. I mean, simple stuff like that, or you know, Wi-Fi hotspot, just stuff that we take for granted now was not available back then. So I can understand now not rooting or jailbreaking, but back in the day, I mean, I think I quit around the 6S time frame.
Yeah, the Cydia store. Right? Wasn't it that's it? What it was called? The Cydia store?
Yes, Cydia store. Yep.
Yeah. There was some neat stuff in there. They were doing theming way before, you know, iOS 13 was, you know, like the theming stuff that we have now and all the widgets and stuff. You could do all that way back then. Now, again, I haven't done it in years, but, you know, that stuff was there, you know, that long ago.
But it was oftentimes buggy, Springboard would crash. Like, you would have a lot of issues with it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you get that out of any jailbroken or rooted or sideloaded device. That happens. That's one of the reasons that they have the App Store and everything in place.
Yeah, it was not designed for other developers to go and integrate with that stuff necessarily in the way that they were integrating with it, which also means that if you have third-party people writing things to do stuff that Apple wouldn't want you to do, it may or may not be possible based on the limitations within the OS or limitations that are placed at the hardware level. With the iPhones are a much more locked-down system than the Macs ever were. And a lot of that stuff isn't for public consumption. Only a small amount of those APIs are actually out there to be consumed by third parties.
All right. I mean, I think some people have gotten access to certain iPhone APIs that they weren't supposed to use, and Apple shuts them down fast. You know, they're like, hey, you've got all this smorgasbord of stuff that you know, we've made available to you, and see those over there? Those are ours. You don't get to play in that pool. You know, and I think that's what makes people mad, but... You know, hey,
all vendors do that, though.
Yeah,
even in the enterprise market.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how my biggest gripe here is I don't see how you can say that Apple doing what they're doing is illegal, yet Microsoft and Sony can do it with their consoles. Like, you've got to buy all sorts of stuff to be able to develop games for those consoles. You can't be an indie developer and basically just show up and run something on an Xbox. You can't.
It's funny. Microsoft came out attacking Apple for this last year, but then when it came to the consoles, they're like, well, that's a completely different thing than iOS. It's like, no, it's not. You guys are hypocritical,
right?
Because you won't let just anything into the Xbox store. So stop throwing rocks at Apple on this one, because, you know, you're very, very hypocritical in this case.
They're like, well, we sell the Xbox at a loss and then make it up on the games. And so we've got to be able to control the games. And Apple's like, well, you're the dummies that are selling your hardware at a loss. That's where the problem is. You shouldn't be doing that.
Well, and the other problem with that that's unconfirmed is that Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo, which, Jim, you're absolutely right. The console comparison is 1,000% the biggest argument I have against that. If you're going to go after Apple for this, then you need to antitrust all of these console vendors, because it's the same thing. They own the entire stack, hardware and software, top to bottom, and they control everything. The kicker with that and why Epic isn't attacking any of them is because it's kind of understood behind closed doors, all three of those companies, because they consider Epic such a big customer of theirs, they cut the rate down from 30 for them. Apple, other than a few really big vendors, from what I understand, has not done any kind of a backdoor deal with anybody where they cut that rate down.
Amazon, right? Didn't they do something with Amazon?
Allegedly.
It's rumored that they did something with Amazon. I think maybe Netflix was one of them. I don't remember if Netflix was one or not, but there's supposedly a few companies that they've done something with. But with Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, you get somebody like a Fortnite or somebody like that in there that's a big seller for them, and sure, they'll cut them a little bit of a discount. Now, nobody knows what the discount's down to. Nobody's publicly said what the discounts are down to. But it's pretty common knowledge that bigger companies are offered a discount that the indies are not. And it's very much kind of like what y'all have said. Apple just kind of holds himself to a higher performance standard and a security standard than most other places do. Now, you can also kind of go, well, how many scam apps are on the App Store that Apple does absolutely nothing about until another developer whines about it and it gets a lot of social media stuff? You're correct on that. That happens a lot more than it should. But a lot of the privacy issues and whatnot seem, knock on wood, that they're not that bad under the current conditions.
It is a complicated subject. I don't know how they're going to solve it, but I won't be crying if they don't add alternate app stores. I'm happy with status quo myself. It's the trade-off you make for having something where I worry more about the people that I support with tech support who are going to be calling me for problems if something like this happens. I wanted this cute little wallpaper on my phone and I had to install this app store to get it. And now my credit card's been compromised or whatever, you know.
And that's actually a really good point. My general manager, his mother-in-law, soon to be mother-in-law, maybe, who knows, they came to me and they said, look, she's wanting to get a computer so she can do Zoom calls. She's just wanting something to do Zoom calls on. What's a nice little computer for her to use for those? And just so she can do this and kind of do some other stuff. I said, that's all she's wanting to do. Get her an iPad. You know, I said, does she have an iPhone? What kind of phone does she use? Well, she uses an iPhone. Get her an iPad. It's identical to that. Does she have any other computers in the house? Well, no, she doesn't. Get her an iPad. It's a bigger screen than she'll like, and it's what she's used to. And sure enough, she got it. She said, oh, thank you so much for the suggestion. This is perfect. It's exactly what I was looking for, and I had no idea it could do all this stuff. And that's all she needed for was just a bigger screen with everything. You know, iPads and iOS in general are such a straightforward device to use, as long as you don't have to put it in DFU mode. And you know, we just hope that kind of stuff never happens.
That's pretty funny. Let's see. What else is going on?
Oh, let's talk about that Gucci VR AR headset there. I got some harsh Festivus thoughts about that.
Well, go ahead. Why don't you lead us off?
Well, there has been a rumor actually it's not a rumor, but Apple's hardware chief, Dan Riccio, here stepped down to focus on AR-VR. And then there was a report that came out that Apple's VR set is going to have 8K monitors in each eye, two 8K monitors, and will have a potential $3,000 price tag. $3,000 for a VR AR headset.
I'm going to need a his and hers.
This is a family friendly.
Is it podcast, standalone?
So I'm not going to say what that headset should do for $3,000, but
I was thinking that.
There was an Onion story about that a couple years back. But anyway, go ahead.
What, it should take me out to dinner?
Well, it should do a lot. That's where it should start. But I'm not even going to, you know, let's just focus on the monitors, all right? Right now, you can't find an 8K monitor in America, to my knowledge, unless it's a specialty store. And you're going to pay five figures for any kind of a monitor TV with 8K. I don't even know that you can find 8K sources of anything out there, except for maybe a couple of stations out of Japan. And I get future-proofing. I really do. But for crying out loud, who on God's green earth is going to pay $3,000 for a headset that you're going to have to wear around? It's
the same people that bought the original generation gold Apple Watch. I mean, think about 20 years ago, right? Before there were LED TVs, there was plasma TVs, right? And so I remember, as early as, I guess, like I said, 20 years ago, walking through Circuit City and, you know, the plasma TVs, and there were $20,000. And then, you know, you go back 3 years later and they were $2,000, right? So I could see a first gen 8K, plus I think it's a little short-sighted of the intended use for one that's that high end, that early in the game. Like I'm thinking of like medical modeling or, you know, like CAD type stuff or, you know, high end engineering. So it, you know, the initial version may not be consumer grade, kind of like a lot of the technology that Formula One teams learn about cars eventually trickle down into consumer cars. So if it's going to have specs that crazy, right, I would expect it to cost three times as much as an Oculus or whatever those cost.
Now, I'll say this. That's an excellent point about the medical field and top-end engineering and CAD programs, because these are places that for those applications, they don't blink at spending $6,000-$10,000 on a Mac Pro workstation. Or the ones that are spending, what is it, $5,000 or $6,000 for the XDR monitor with the $1,000 hinge or whatnot.
And the $800 wheels.
I forgot about the wheels. Thank you for that add-on. The other thing that was interesting in this rumor is that Apple is possibly designing these monitors in-house. And if they're like they're figuring out how to make the screens themselves. As of right now, that's the one big component in their devices that they're having to outsource design on. They've moved their chips in-house, and it's been so successful, they're moving the Macs over to them now. The one big thing that they're having to depend on everybody else for is screen technology. And if they can figure out how to get 8K quality screens down to a headset size, it's only a matter of time before you see 4K screens in the phones.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to end up doing something that's going to cost that much, too. That could just be a prototype, you know. It seems very expensive even for something that Apple would release, but only time will tell. We definitely know they're going to do something, but I have a feeling they're going to do more with AR than VR.
Well, and it depends. Granted, you know, when we think of a VR headset, we think of these big, huge, bulky things that sit on your head, and the first generations will probably be like that. I also want to say the report spoke about a number of external cameras that were on the goggles that would be far, far more than what you need out of a standard VR headset. With those many external cameras, you could do very much an AR, LiDAR type deal where you're wearing the goggles, but with a very, very low latency, you can see the outside world and interact with it. I'm not certain right off of how bad the latency is on, say, an iPad camera when you look at it on screen and you're waving your hand behind it. But if they could get that latency down to something almost imperceptible, you could wear goggles like that and simulate the AR with everything. And if they could get a set of goggles like that that does do that, that you can then interact with your software, it ends up being about where Google Glass was hoping to be, you know, a few generations of tech ago.
That'd be like living in Blade Runner, yo.
It would be kind of neat, I have to admit. So it looks like, first of all, Facebook wants to inflict pain on Apple over this whole privacy stuff that's coming out in iOS 14.5. I don't know how Facebook would actually inflict pain on Apple. I mean, they're trying to whine that that they're being oppressed by this, help, I'm being repressed, or whatever the, help, I'm being oppressed.
I'm 37, I'm not old.
There you go. Nice Monty Python references, I love it.
Yeah, that whole story is ridiculous. You know, Facebook is too damn big to, you know, cry like that. Like, you know, you've made your business model. It is what it is. It's going to last as long as until people catch on, and then it goes away. You know, ride it out.
Most people are going to look at that privacy thing that pops up, like the end user license agreement. Do you accept? Yeah, sure, whatever. And they just click OK and go on. I think Facebook is worried a lot about nothing. Snapchat in their public filing said the same thing. So apparently everybody's a little bit worried. Twitter wasn't.
Well, I don't think Twitter, you know, I don't think that they do that much. I don't know that they're, whereas Facebook found an extremely scummy way to make billions and millions of dollars, I still don't think Twitter's figured out how to make anything yet. They just kind of keep floating along somehow.
They're fueled by hate.
Exactly. And inflict pain. I mean, Facebook is a very influential company.
Well, they just had to ban, like, their, you know, the one user they have that everybody wanted to see what the hell he would say next. You know, I mean,
it is a weird world without all those crazy tweets coming out.
Well, you know, Facebook has attempted to make devices, and I don't know what kind of success they've had with the little, the Facebook portal that was the little 6-inch screen that you set on your desk in your kitchen or whatnot. Like I said, I see you've posted in here that Facebook's looking at making a watch. They're trying to offer some kind of a smartwatch, and that's terrifying on a number of levels about how much information they could gather from you at that point.
Well, the rumor there is that they're going to try and sell it either at cost or at a loss to hurt Apple or something. Now, Apple apparently has sold over 100 million devices of the Apple Watch, so they're starting at sort of a...
And tell me how you're going to hurt the biggest company ever?
Yeah, I don't think they could, because they're saying they're also wanting to make it so that it doesn't require a phone and runs over cellular. Now, as someone who's owned a cellular watch for just about every version of the Apple Watch, that'll eat through battery pretty quick. So I don't see this thing being, unless it's the size of one of Jason's Garmin hubcap sized wrist devices, I don't see this thing lasting more than 3 hours without needing to be recharged.
Well, a lot of it depends.
Is Go-Go Gadget phones on his wrist?
Yes.
A lot of it depends.
Looks like Flavor Flav got lost. Oh, sorry, fine. Josh. Sorry.
A lot of it depends on what all Facebook puts in the watch. you know, what it's going to offer. I don't know what feature set Facebook could offer to make it a desirable product for the mainstream people. I know Facebook is just thinking that's even more data that we can collect on people and sell to people, sell to advertisers. Inflict pain on Apple? Like they're a very influential company. You can even make the argument that they are the number one media source in the world at this point. That as far as media and information is concerned, everything runs through Facebook. And there's an alarming number of people that all the information they ever get is through Facebook. Not from the news, not from the papers, not from TV or radio. They get it through Facebook.
That's horrifying.
Very.
But it's true. Think about that. Think about the fact of how Facebook has just recently very little had to have their feet held to the fire. Oh, well, we'll start trying to disprove misinformation and some of this kind of stuff. But even with that, all they have to do is lean things a certain way and skew it a certain way, and Apple starts being looked at in a very unfavorable light. There are ways that they can go through and inflict pain. Now, can they shut down Apple? Can they make Apple's life a living hell? Can they hurt the company? Can they kill their sales? I doubt a lot of that. But, I mean, by and large, Apple's been pretty much a darling in the industry for quite some time now. And even those of us, we take our rose-colored glasses off. If the five of us started doing a full-blown Apple Festivus and an airing of grievances, we'd be here till 4 a.m. We really would be, because we know what kind of problems. They're far from a perfect company. Facebook, has Facebook ever tried to do an actual mobile device, a phone? I think Amazon.
Yes, they made one. They made one a few years ago. It fizzled out really fast. But they made a Facebook phone running Android probably 5-6 years ago, something like that.
And I think it was the first phone that ever went on sale 50% off opening weekend. Like, it was that big a flop.
Yeah. It was that bad that it went on the moment it was unveiled. It was slashed pretty deep, kind of like the Amazon phone was.
But and really, if you stop and think about it, how difficult would it be for them to sideload the Google Play Store and make a special version of Android that is just completely and utterly tailored to Facebook? You would think that there'd be some people that would be all over that.
Apparently not, because it wasn't a big seller the last time they tried it.
Well, if all you want to do is play Farmville while you're waiting for, you know, your mom to come pick you up from school or something, I mean, I guess that's the way to go. Even if you don't mind, you know, being tracked wherever you go to.
They would have to pull an Amazon and sell it at a loss. You know what I mean? That's exactly how they'd have to do it, which I don't think they're that dedicated.
You know, it's I don't think we had it in the show notes, but it was like all that information that came out about Roku's, about how much they're reporting back that people are doing and watching. And, you know, that's why a Roku stick costs what it does and an Apple TV costs what it does. I mean, I know part of that's Apple and they're charging probably more than they should. But also, Apple couldn't get that low if they weren't able to sell all your damn information. Like, that's, you know, that's part of what it is, you know? I mean, I realize with Amazon, that's why they can sell me a cheap Echo device, because...
And you're all over it.
You know, and basically, all they can sell about me is they know my location, and they know I turn on and off a lot of lights. I don't do that much else.
They're always listening to every conversation you have all the time on 6 different things.
Yeah, but I've got all those things blocked.
They know what your favorite Pokemon are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I the pie hole picks up so many, you know, transactions from those things that it blocks. And here recently, I actually just banned my Sony TV from talking, because it was the Android TV was the chattiest thing in my whole house. It was ridiculous. So I just literally just said, with that Eero, I just put pause, just pause the TV's network connection. And, you know, every now and then I unpause it to check to see if there's an update. And if there's not, I pause it right back.
Or you could just ban it in your pie hole too. Just every device, everything it tries to look up, just do this. I don't even know why I have mine on the internet. I should just take mine off there altogether. Let's see. Anybody running the iOS 14.5 beta yet? I know we asked that last episode. I'm just curious if anyone's taken the plunge. I figured one of you guys probably would by now.
I wanted to, but I still haven't done it yet. I need to do it. Gruber actually posted that he's already done it, which, I mean, just saying, he doesn't run betas. And he posted a really good review of it and said it, he's so used to it now that he can't imagine being without it. And, you know, for him to effuse like that about a beta, you know, because he's he's an Apple guy, obviously, in whatever, but he's not usually somebody who runs the betas, you know, like that. He's like, this is it. I'm not switching back. I think the one thing that's kept me from going to it is you've got to update the phone and the watch.
And I've heard over and over again, watch betas are nothing to get near.
Right.
Well, you can't undo them. You have to send them back to Apple if something happens, which, yeah, I guess I'll wait on that one. But so it looks like Apple Maps has Google and Waze like accident reporting now, which is kind of nice. You can report speed traps. You can report, you know, things that have happened on the road. And you can do it with Siri, which is kind of nice. I did discover a week or so ago that if you just tell Siri to navigate to a location and say use Waze at the end on your phone, it will automatically open Waze with that destination input.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That was kind of neat. In fact, I didn't know that. And as I was firing it up, I had a Siri tip pop up on the screen like, you know, if you want to navigate using Waze, just tell me. Use blah, 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 blah. And it was like, thanks. You know, that's never happened. And
a Siri tip that's useful. Wow.
That's more useful than you usually are.
Yes, like 10,000 more times useful.
Yeah. I was surprised Monday morning. I had a doctor's appointment, and it was a new place. And I opened up their email where it had the address, and I clicked on it. And I guess they had, like, you know, it was enabled to click on the address, but it opened up Google Maps on my phone. So I don't know if, like, they had a built-in, like, Google Maps link in their email, but my phone is set up to use Apple Maps as the default. And yet, when I clicked on that link in the email, it actually opened up directions in Google Maps, which I thought was kind of odd. I don't know. I just kind of assumed.
You can craft an
yeah.
X URL handler, X callback, whatever that thing is in iOS, that can actually open Google Maps.
Yeah.
So it's possible to do that. And if you're using Spark or something like that, you can also set your mail client. Over in Fantastical, you can also set, like, if somebody sends you an address for a meeting, you can say open in and make a default thing be Waze or Google Maps.
Yeah.
So, but I think the X callback URL, whatever you can do, just like if you put in Waze colon blah, blah, blah.
Right.
In the email, and you're on mobile, you open it, it'll automatically open Waze with that address. So
just found it, you know, like it opened up and it's like, hey, let me show you my new features. And I'm like, there are no Maps features. I know those only come out once a year when I get a new operating system. And then I realized I'm in Google Maps. I'm like, oh, okay.
Though it is worth noting that in 14.5, that is a massive Maps change. So that's, you know, that's actually kind of something. That's breaking with convention.
True that. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're right. Wow.
I think we've covered just about everything that I wanted to cover in this episode. We're coming up on about an hour anyway. Two little things that I want to give mention to is I was listening to the App Stories podcast, and they were talking about wanting to make a Siri shortcut for things where they could do a link. Like if you're listening to something in Spotify and you want to post Apple Music for your Apple Music friends, they were going to write a shortcut that did it. Well, apparently there's an app and it's called Opener that you can get on the App Store for about $2. And it uses a third-party service, but it works really, really well for being able to do just that. So you can make an action. So the action, you hit the little button, the little share sheet button, and one of the options that pops up is open an opener, and you open the opener. Let's say you copy a Spotify link. Well, you go to opener through the shortcut, through the share button. It'll generate automatically. It has it pulled up of, do you want to make this an Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon Music? Share it through all these different sources. So it was a very nifty little utility, and I think it's worth the $2. The other thing I want to mention, I've mentioned this before, but the Backbone One controller I've been getting some use out of lately, and I can't speak highly enough of this thing. When you're wanting to play iOS games, or you're wanting to play your Xbox remotely, PS4 remotely, or Steam games remotely on your iPhone, it can't be beat. Has a built-in little social network, which I thought was weird. Has its own leaderboards, and it's even set up for being able to do stuff from Twitch. Like, it has all types of crazy little integrations in this thing. It's fantastic. It's $100, and it's very, very useful.
So it's the piece of hardware and an app you put on your phone?
Yeah, and the app has all of that built into it as well. So, and it charges through a Lightning port, which has pass-through. But it claims that it actually uses less batteries than a Bluetooth headset. But I haven't found it to be excessively draining on the battery, but if you do plug it in, it's nice that it uses a Lightning port, since it's mostly, you know. Now, I will say for the iPhone 12s, I've had to take my case off when I want to use it. It will not clamp down with a case on it, even with this little thin silicone case that I have.
So I think one of the most used shortcuts I have on my phone, well, maybe not most used, but I use it all the time, is tweet a song. So basically it's, it gets the album art, it gets the link, it puts it all together, and it sends it over to Twitter. So, you know, I play, you know, I don't tweet as near as much as I used to, but, you know, if I'm listening to a song and I hadn't heard in a while or a new one or something, I'm like, I'm going to tweet that. And so I just, you know, tweet out a song link, and basically it's like, if somebody sees it, that's great. If somebody doesn't, you know, I don't know. I'm like, I'm digging this song, I'm going to tweet it. I think the last person to reply to me on one of them was my mom. So there's that. She's like, oh, I like that one. So, you know, mom's watching my tweets at least. So
that's hilarious. Anybody got anything they want to share before we call it a show? Anything cool? Anything interesting? Freeform. What is it, guys? Tell me something.
So my wife finally let me play with her Nintendo Switch the other day, and it was pretty cool. And of course, I had to go old school because I grew up too poor to own any flavor of Nintendo. So I have no, you know, muscle memory or experience with that. So we immediately had to download Galaga and Q-Bert and the Atari arcade, so Missile Command, and then we, I guess the one Nintendo product I had experience with was Donkey Kong, so I played a little bit of that as well.
Ah, that's what you were playing that on the other day. Okay. For $20 a year, you also get access to Nintendo Online, where they do the porting of old NES and Super NES games to the Switch. I've been doing that for a while, and it's kind of neat that they're getting stuff. They get stuff pretty frequently.
Super Mario Brothers never gets old, ever.
No, like, never.
I could start it up and play it at any time and sit there for an hour. I mean, just ever. It.
Super Mario 2 was my favorite of all time, I think.
One of the things that I've noticed that is, if I'm playing one of those old games, I really need an actual Nintendo controller before it feels normal. Like the ones with the Joy-Cons are too responsive. So like when you're having to balance Mario, he jumps on something, you pull back just a little bit. It's so much easier on the 80s controller than it is on the modern one. It's so responsive that I make him run in the wrong direction or fall off. It's not the same. So I have to...
You need that little D-pad instead of the,
yes,
the joystick. Yes,
yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Corners cut into your hands.
But it has to be one like the original controller, where it was not as responsive. And it, you know how to finesse it from muscle memory from when you were a kid.
Josh, if you play them enough, you build up calluses.
Yes, you did.
That's right.
You did. That's why the Super NES controller was so much better than that original NES, because it did not wear the calluses into your hand.
And it wasn't square either.
Right.
That too. It was much more ergonomic. Josh convinced me to buy Hades for the Switch this week. I haven't played it yet, but I bought it while it was on sale, so the next time I fire it up, I should. I was just saying to my wife tonight, I should spend more time playing stuff on the Switch. I've never finished Breath of the Wild, Zelda, because it's so, it's so open-ended. It takes forever. And I've only been, now I have time, but previously I did not have as much time.
As somebody who actually, in my house, has physically every Nintendo console ever made. Shoot, I'm sitting here thinking, because I've got my brother's stash too. I think I may not have. I've got a Saturn. I got a Dreamcast. I've got a PS 1, 2, 3, and 4. I'm trying to think of what I don't have. But the Switch is the best console ever released. And it's one of those that you can make that face all you want to. It's the best console ever released for one very simple reason. I can be playing it on the couch. Nature can call. I can hit pause on the controller, go pick it up out of the dock, take it to the bathroom, keep playing, and then put it back on the dock and keep going when I'm done.
Don't buy Josh's Switch used is what I'm
understanding. Don't buy it, yeah. Can you play Madden on a Switch, though? See, that was my problem. I bought that Switch, and I couldn't play Madden on my Switch. Like, release Madden for the Switch, and I'll play it. But, like, they don't have any... Like,
that's a whole other podcast as to why EA hasn't released these things. The only big thing that EA Sports has released, or EA, I'm still calling them EA Sports from back in the day, is FIFA. And the game FIFA.
I saw that, yeah.
But there's a problem with that. The FIFA that's on there is either FIFA 18 or 19. Literally, from FIFA 19, FIFA 20, and FIFA 21, they are the same exact game with the same exact engine, the same exact menus. All they have done is update the rosters, and they're charging another $60 for it. But that's why EA is such a popular company with everything. There are definitely some games that you can't get on the Switch. yes, some of the newer stuff that they port to it, it's got to run downscaled to like 540p. There's some stuff that it does. When it's in handheld mode, it's not as powerful. But you can take the stupid thing everywhere. You know, you can play it on the big screen. You can unhook the Joy-Cons and play them. You can throw it in your backpack and bring it with you to work or on trips or play it on the plane. And there's just so many wonderful games for it.
I gave mine to Megan's niece for Christmas in 2019, and she loves it. So,
do you have any gaming consoles left, Jason? Jim?
Nope. I had an Xbox, and my nephew's Xbox died around Thanksgiving last year. He had a birthday coming up, so I still had the box. So I boxed that Xbox up, and that was his birthday present.
So you can't play Madden at all anyway.
So I have no consoles left. Yep.
I'm sorry, Jason. Didn't mean to cut you off.
I was just going to say my experience playing the Switch the other night for the first time. I agree the controller is a little bit different than what I had been used to playing other stuff. But what was really weird was playing a old school game on a 65-inch TV 15 feet across the room. Like that was just kind of a, kind of mess with your timing, mess with your perception, that kind of stuff. But overall, it was pretty cool.
The Switch has a lot of great games. I wouldn't call it the greatest gaming system ever, but I see the appeal. I can see where you would make the case for that. Just because it doesn't have a lot of those AAA titles that it probably should have, that's a frustrating thing. If you love anime and you love anime-type characters, boy, the Switch is for you. Like, it could be your little waifu pillow if you really wanted it to. It's really it's really kind of shocking how much of that stuff is Switch related. And it does have a number of, it has things like Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, which I actually play quite a bit. I like that. The lack of voice chat and the way it is to pair up with other people is also a big impediment. So
it's also criminal that it is a handheld, it's a console that you can play handheld that uses Bluetooth controllers. That's how all the controllers connect to it is Bluetooth, but it does not natively support Bluetooth headphones. You have to get a Bluetooth adapter through the handset. Yep, you got to get a jack for that. Just like he's showing up.
Yeah.
Got a terrible one that doesn't work all that great. It works, but it's still not great. I hate trying to unpair and repair my AirPods for everything.
You got to think that part of that is because they want the ultimate performance for the Joy-Cons, for the Bluetooth Joy-Cons. And if they try to connect anything else to it, you could have interference with those, which basically breaks the actual purpose of the Switch,
yeah,
right?
Except for the fact, I think
maybe you just have two Bluetooth radios in there. I don't know. I don't know what you do, but you do something.
Yeah, but it seems like I think Sony and Microsoft's consoles don't have that problem. I can't remember if you I think you can use Bluetooth headphones. You could use it with the PS4, I think. Seems like you could pair them up and do that. But, Nintendo and Apple are very similar companies in that they both hit the 90-10 rule, in my opinion, right down the middle. 90% of the stuff they do, you think, my gosh, that's brilliant. Why does nobody copy what you do? And the last 10% is like, you were the stupidest company I've ever dealt with. Why did you make this boneheaded decision?
And to be fair, they've done a really good job with the Zelda games, the Mario games, Mario Kart, Super Smash Brothers, all those. They have some great titles.
Their
Animal
titles
Crossing.
And their designers are great. Yeah, I'll
good
give you
thing
that.
That's on brand. Yeah, they do really great.
It's just that they need to also have things like Madden. They need to have Call of Duty. They need to have, whatever that comes out.
Well, and a lot of that is that the main reason for it is that the Switch, the processing power on it, which I think it's what, an NVIDIA Tegra 3, which was really good at the time, handheld-wise,
yeah,
but
not,
now it's
not super
long
powerful.
Too. A lot of the stuff that even PS4 and Xbox One was capable of, you can't do on the Switch. You got to downgrade it. And a lot of these different engines, your Unity and your Unreal Engine now, they have much more of a write-once compile anywhere, for lack of a better term, that you still have to do some tweaking, but by and large, you can write a game, and as long as you target, say, the top end, like PC or PS4, Xbox One, you can downgrade it to a mobile device or a handheld or something to that effect. And Nintendo, I think both Unity and Unreal Engine, you can use both of those to write for the Switch. But regardless, I'll also say that for Hades, yes, Hades is one of the best games I've ever played in my life. I need to play it more. It can be frustrating at times, but it's a fantastic game start to finish. And if you have anything about Greek mythology, the storyline's just incredible what they've done with it.
Yeah, I look forward to trying it out. Well, it was good to have all five of us here tonight, so I think that's a first.
Is that a first? I think it is.
I think it is, too.
When you set the bar that high, you know, you got to keep matching it.
That's right. You guys got to come all back for the next episode.
Yeah, it's so symmetrical. Like, I've got, like, four squares on my screen. It's not, like, one big square and two small squares over it. It's, like, four. I wondered why this looked different today, but it's because it's all four squares in Skype that I'm able to see here. And yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right, guys. Well, that's a show. And later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopback. That's at INFIN Loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at BRIANB. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at BIGJIM. Jason is at JSNYNG. That's at JSNYNG. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at MEESTERIDLE. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.